Members, we're going to get started. We had laid over House File 439 yesterday. We're going to lift that off the table and have Representative Norton come forward and your motion is still on the table to pass House File 439 as amended to the Finance Committee with a recommendation to K-12 Finance Committee. Representative Norton.
Mr. Chair, we do have an amendment this morning. After having a discussion yesterday with the Department of Education, they asked or suggested that it would be better to be a little less specific and more generic in referring to the standards because they do change from time to time. So I do have a technical amendment.
Representative Norton moves the AL90047 amendment. Do all members have that in your packet? Maybe you can just explain it very quickly. I know you just did a bit of it.
Yes, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Since
they have a schedule there. We're just trying to be less specific about the number of standards that are referenced in the bill because standards do change periodically and the number of them change. So we're just going to take out the specific number and also the QCAN standards are more benchmarks, and so we were just trying to be less specific, more general, and make the bill a little more accessible to the department.
So, Representative Norton, and perhaps the department can help with this, and the difference between standards and benchmarks for the sake of the bill is what?
Correct.
Mr. Chair, Shepard Harris, here on behalf of the American Heart Association. I don't want to speak on behalf of the department, but in our conversations that we had yesterday after the hearing, my understanding is that the benchmarks are related to the standards or based on the standards. So it's more of just getting the right term and not causing any confusion. So the benchmarks are based on the NASA, QCN benchmarks are based on the national standards.
Thank you. Representative Norton.
To the amendment, question for the author. By deleting page 1, line 8 of the amendment and 1.9, delete to students entering the ninth grade, am I correct then that if we attach this amendment and the bill were to become law, students graduating this year would have to comply with the FIED standards? Because that's a plain English reading.
Mr. Chair, as I understand it, it does currently say for the 2009-2010 school year and later.
Next year.
So,
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, students in 11th grade now who have not had any FIED would have to take FIED next year in order to graduate, or they would not be granted a diploma under this bill. Is that correct?
I don't believe that was the intent of the bill. If that is how it is stated, we can certainly adjust that.
Mr. Chair, I'm not a lawyer.
Representative Debney, I think what I'm hearing...
But I do read English.
Right. I agree with your reading of it, but what I think it sounds like the consensus here is that we don't want it applied that quickly to students. Does the author have a desire or will either way on this, or would you like to have some time to think about that or confer with the Department of Education?
Okay.
Representative Norton.
If my customer could respond to that, I think he has some comment, and then I will certainly give you my opinion as well.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Dabney, the purpose in that change was actually a suggestion from the Revisor's Office. We want to make sure that the academic standards that we're proposing apply K through 12 and not just for, it could be interpreted the way that the effective date reads for this section could apply just to standards could apply just for high school students. So it could just be for students entering ninth grade in this coming fall and then further into the future. So the purpose was to avoid any misinterpretation that the standards, while we're trying to capture all grade levels, that it would only apply to high school and actually self-defeat the purpose of this bill.
Right. I think
that's what we're trying to get at.
Right. Ms. Harris, I think we understand it, but the fact nonetheless is what I think Ms. Representative Abney has indicated, so perhaps there's a better way to word this. Perhaps we need a little time to think about that, and we can certainly hear perhaps on the rest of the bill. We do have some public individuals of the public who wish to testify on the bill. Perhaps we can hear that while we work out some language. Representative Norton and Mr. Harris, you might want to work with our staff on some alternative language. So we will not at this point.
Withdraw the amendment.
Yeah, if you can withdraw the amendment, that'd be wonderful. Thank you. Representative Norton withdraws the AO90047 amendment. Representative Abler.
Thank you. I hope the two people at the table don't run off too far. I've got some suggestions. Not to this amendment, but to the idea of it. I support the bill. I'm a co-author, I think. But there's some concerns I have is that stuff that actually become law. I read in the paper today that this actually cost money, and the chair of the finance committee liked it, but said good luck. And so I would like to have this actually become true. And it seems to me, as districts are strapped, that we want to give them some flexibility as well, just to keep in mind. And we're trying to get kids moving, and some kids are already involved in activities of sports. The wrestlers don't need that extra half hour at half credit. They work really hard already. And maybe as this moves along, I have no amendment today, but as this moves along, I think that if you're open to allowing the flexibility about kids who are, if they're in, there's some sports that are, if there's a tiddlywink team that probably wouldn't qualify. But if there's some way to insert that as a option that the district could waive them out of. And the second thing is, if you focus on fitness, and there may be a way to even, just to get the cost down and the burden down to accomplish the same goal. And my interest is in seeing something become law. I signed the bill the way it was. The third thing is magnet schools. In my district, we have some magnet schools that are absolutely rescuing kids to keep them liking going to school. We have an arts and music magnet school. And if we take away, if we put this into their program, it messes up the magnet piece. And so as it goes along, just keep that in mind. I'm voting yes today on whatever version it's in, knowing this has a ways to go, and I wish you well in your project.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate you raising the issue with regard to students that participate in other activities. And I know this bill was heard over the last 2 years. There was an amendment at that time for it. I actually have a copy of it because I, too, am interested in that component but wasn't quite ready to bring it forward. Assume perhaps at the next hearing, either you or even myself could forward that amendment. But I think you raise an excellent point, and I would like local districts to be able to have an option of allowing students who participate in numerous other activities to qualify, because it is about getting kids moving. As a mother of four children, two of mine did a lot of moving and were in several three sports each year, and perhaps wouldn't have benefited as greatly as two of my other children who didn't do any and spend a lot of time in front of a computer. So I think we do need to offer that flexibility. I'm certainly open to that.
And Ms. Shirley, I have to confess to knowing one of the witnesses yesterday, and Mr. Alwell and I were classmates at Hamlin back in around the turn of the century. Seems like it anyway. Mid-70s. I'd never thought of... not to disparage him. I had never thought of this as a way to even minimize the achievement gap, which is something we don't want to lose either.
And Representative Abler, it would certainly be desirable, or rather Representative Norton, it would certainly be desirable to, if there are substantive policy changes to the bill, that we try to do that in policy committee. The next stop for this bill would be Representative Gladley's committee, K-12 Finance, and while that's certainly appropriate to amend policy at that point, I think their desire is to have as clean, as possible versions of the policy bill so that they can focus on the finance issues. Of course, there's always floor amendments, and that's probably the worst thing, quite frankly, in terms of procedurally, is to do major policy changes on the floor.
Mr. Chair, if I could just address that. I certainly understand your point, and And in speaking with some of the folks who also are supportive of this bill and in honoring the work that had been done in the past, I just decided it was probably most appropriate to come forward with the bill as it had originally been intended and see what the committee thought. Because this bill isn't really about my personal preferences, it's about what's best for kids. And so while I personally agree with Representative Abler, if the two of us are the only people that have that opinion, I was willing to leave it to the group. And since someone else brought the amendment forward, I decided to just go forward with the bill as it's written.
I think it's very wise, Representative Norton. And we do have a couple of other questions, and perhaps there may be other amendments that might come forward as a result of our discussion here today. And I want to make sure we take enough time to be able to get this bill in the best shape possible if we're going to move it forward. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I struggle with when we're talking about the standards. We have math, we have reading, we have science, we have social studies. I think that's kind of the core of what we talk about with academic preparedness for our kids in our schools. And, you know, through the years I've been here, we've talked about language standards, foreign language standards, for example. That everybody should know a foreign language. I think that's a good idea, but should it be a standard that all our kids, all our schools adhere to? The arts. We know arts are important. Arts are a good thing. Art is it expands the mind, and it's very broad, and I think that's good. Should that be a standard? Those are all good for broad-based education also.
Mm-hmm.
Physical education, of course, is very, very important. I and my kids probably would have fallen in the category of maybe being excluded because of their activity in the school district that I come from. Probably 60-70% of the kids are involved in some sort of extracurricular activities, not just fine arts, but also sports and some sort of physical thing. So they might get excluded. The concern I have, however, is as we go down the path, we have a tendency to start with something we have standards for. We think that's good. Well, now we think this is important too, so let's require that. Well, now we think this is important too, so let's require that. And pretty soon, I believe what we'll end up with down the path, if we step back and look at a continuous time, someday somebody can have to look at this and say, what are we doing here? We have to get back to our core mission of educating children. And I believe this is one of those incremental steps that we may be taking with all due respect. I'm a big fan of trying to be more physical fit myself, for crying out loud, and probably want to learn about these things. But that's a concern I have, and just from a philosophical standpoint, you know, how many standards do we want to have? What is education really about? It's about, we can't do everything to every kid and to every person. You know, the other step is we do have a standard, and I have to say that. We have a standard for arts, we have a standard for physical education right now. It's called locally developed standards, where we trust the local administration, we trust the local FIAD teachers in their department, we trust the local school board to come up with a standard that they think is appropriate for their school district. And that's in place. So are we saying that we don't think they're capable of doing that? Are we afraid they wouldn't do it the way we would do it, and therefore we need to tell them that they have to do it in this certain way because we're afraid they might not do it like we say? You know, we're going down that path again. And this isn't something that we're going to go out and assess, and this isn't something we're going to use in the interest of other standards such as math, science, reading, and social studies, where we can say we need to have kind of benchmarks so that as kids are mobile between school districts, we need to have certain benchmarks. That's not true in this particular area, so I don't know if it meets that standard, pun intended in that word. And the last thing is, think about the different styles of educating kids that we have now. We have our traditional schools, and I think that's probably the framework that most of us are in. But how about charter schools? Do all charter schools have the physical facilities to be able to fulfill this requirement for the children that they teach? How about online learning? We have more and more kids now going to high school online. We can like it or dislike it for our kids or for our friends or whatever, but the bottom line is it's happening. PSEO. We're going down these paths. We have alternatives where kids can graduate early if they get their credits. We're looking at doing that sort of thing. I just think that as we expand this, we create more issues, and I have a hard time, some of the issues that Representative Abler brought up, I agree with, that would have to be done for sure if we're going to go down this path. But I guess I would respectfully suggest that maybe we leave this as a local standard. Let local school districts decide how they want to handle this particular issue and give them one less thing to have to deal with in terms of a mandate. I'm trying to stay away from that word, but that's what keeps coming into my mind. So thank you for indulging me, Mr. Chair. I don't know if there's a question in there. Other than, I guess I would like to hear if, Representative Norton, if you have given consideration to the online component or to even the academies, for example, that we have, how would they satisfy this, and is that something that's been brought into consideration?
Thank you, Representative Zimmer, and it's not just an indulgence. These issues and these questions have been raised in the past, and it's important that we struggle with them and that we own them. I do note that, you know, we currently do have, the issue isn't whether or not there'll be standards in this area. The real issue is who then develops the standards. So the state's already spoken about, at least as I understand it, that this will be among our standards. We're currently allowing it for local development. And then the other issue, which you didn't touch on, but I think it came close, is graduation requirements. So now we're making graduation requirements. One of the issues we've heard in the past is that it lowers the ability to do electives because, you know, it's got to come out at some, you know, somewhere in terms of the time of the... but you've also raised the question about online realities in our case, in some of our K-12 learning environments. Representative Norton, any comments or thoughts on any of those?
Well, I would say certainly there are philosophical differences about the issue of standards, and I would say we have moved in the state in the direction we have moved over the years with having statewide standards, and the whole nation's moving in that direction because local districts were creating their own standards, and at some point somebody said they're too variable, they're not uniform, and I would argue that physical education and art also should be part of that holistic education that a child has and should have the same rigor of standards as any other academic area. So we just differ philosophically on that. So, you know, we don't allow local standards for English, math, nor should we allow them for physical education. That would be my take on that. As far as the online learning, ironically, I was speaking with someone in the last several days about physical education, and their child is taking physical education online. And we really, I mean, to me, that brings up the whole need for this particular issue to be brought forward because there are appropriate applications for online learning. To say that you've met your physical education requirement because you can regurgitate facts on a computer screen is not meeting the intent of the bill, which is getting kids moving, improving their health, lowering obesity and diabetes, improving their academic learning, which we heard from one of the testifiers yesterday, can be a result of a quality physical education and movement opportunity for students in the curriculum. So, the academies issue, I don't know enough about them to be able to address that, I don't think, unless...
Mr. Harris, do we know anything about do we have any evaluative information about the variety of standards across the state currently in this area in terms of, I don't know, their efficacy, their, you know, commonness, anything that points to uniformity and how they're being applied?
Mr. Chair, to my knowledge, no. That's something that we've tried to obtain. I'm not sure if that's something that even the department has information on. I don't know the answer to that question. From my understanding, we haven't uncovered as we've looked for that. We just know that it is inconsistent. But are there any commonalities? There may be some school districts that do follow this. I shouldn't use the word may. There are school districts that do use the Quality Teaching Network benchmark. There are school districts that do use the national standards, either or, and that's where we're giving that local control that Representative Zimmer was referring to. But in terms of determining, next to the local impact note that was done last year, there was a response rate of 82 school districts and charter schools as well, more than 70 were already meeting or abiding by those benchmarks or by those standards. But in terms of the variation beyond that, there's no information that I'm aware of.
Thank you. Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will vote for this bill today, but I do have several concerns. The first one is something that Representative Demmer mentioned, that at a time when we're trying to reduce unfunded mandates, here we come with another unfunded mandate. As good as it may sound to do this, it still is an unfunded mandate, and that's a concern of mine. Second concern I have is that I'm not sure that this is the best way to accomplish our goal that we're trying to accomplish with this. I'm not sure that an extra half credit of FIED in a four-year span of time is really going to do that much to prevent obesity and get our children in better shape. I don't know if this is the best way to do it or not. I haven't looked at other options, but I'm wondering if there aren't better options out there. And the third concern I have is one that Representative Aber brought up. My youngest son, in the 4 years he was in high school, never had more than a week at a time that he wasn't practicing for one varsity sport or another. Never probably more than 4 weeks total for a whole year. And there's several points there. Number one, I don't know what he gains by being in Phi Ed, other than he enjoyed it. Number two, because he was spending 3 hours a day pretty much year-round practicing for one sport or another, he really needed that extra study hall that he could have gotten by not taking the Phi Ed class, because he didn't have time at night to prepare and to study as much as I wish he had. And so I think that it's really an important thing for several reasons. When I discussed this with Representative Ward last year, he said, well, he's the kind of guy I want in my Phi Ed class to be the example. Well, I play basketball a couple mornings a week, and I'm playing against guys in their 20s. And I enjoy it more sometimes if they weren't there, quite frankly. I'd feel a lot better about myself anyway if they weren't there. And so I think that it's the same thing for some of those other kids in Phi Ed, that if kids like my son hadn't been there, they could have, you know, probably enjoyed it a lot more and probably, you know, could have felt a lot better about themselves. But that's beside the point, I guess. I also think that it'd be interesting to watch somebody play dodgeball on an online Phi Ed class.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate your point, Representative Faust. But I will say, as a standalone requiring the 0.5, in fact, I think originally people wanted more than 0.5, but 0.5 is where we're at, that alone would not address obesity. It is in combination with the K-8 standards and a lifetime, or at least beginning a lifetime value of physical education and practice of physical education that's at risk. And I wouldn't be bringing this bill forward if the only thing it was asking for was the 0.5. It is because we're going to embed the standard K-8 as well. I appreciate the point. Thank you.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks to Representative Faust and Demmer, because they pretty much hit the points that I wanted to make in terms of my own opinion. And one other comment I would add is I wouldn't have thought of this in terms of academic achievement until some of the testimony yesterday, mm-hmm. and I'm curious with the success that Naperville has had, why pretty much every district in the country wouldn't be gravitating towards a strategy like that if, in fact, it can produce the academic results. So I guess just in the spirit of giving information and allowing districts to trade best practices without a mandate, maybe we'd gravitate to a more robust approach to this over time anyway without anything coming here from the state. So with that as a comment, I do have one question. Do we know how many districts don't have a half-credit FIAD requirement right now in the state? I know my district does, but...
Representative Norton.
And I don't have I wish I could say I know an exact amount, but of the survey that was done a year ago, only one of the 80 or 82 people or school districts that reported, only one did not. So you're correct in that the fiscal cost would be very small just because most school districts do it, but not all. And this would address those that do not.
Mr. Chair, just a comment in response to that. Again, I'm wondering if we're mandating something that's already in existence and whether the value of a state mandate exists or not. So, thank you.
Representative Norton.
I think it does level the playing field, but it also is going to improve the quality because it will embed the standards as well, and so everyone will have the same standards. So, again, the components of the bill complement each other. There's three full components, and they do complement each other. And I would say to you, I liked what I heard. I heard you questioning last week, or yesterday, seems like last week, the authors about the Naperville study. And I do think this does not disallow creativity within districts. In fact, it will say all districts are going to do it, and how they do it is certainly can be unique to the school district, because we're not telling them what their physical education program needs to look like or how much activity the students do or don't have to have. They can choose to do Naperville's program, and they do have wonderful results, and I would encourage them to do it.
Senator McFarland.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if we could hear from the Minnesota School Board Association if they could tell us the reaction of the local school districts and the hardships that the districts that do not have FIED will be facing. And also, while he's coming down, if they have any comments, I know the Minnesota School Boards and Association has been helpful in looking at the state mandates that we currently have. And again, like others have said, we're trying to reduce mandates and not add mandates. And so I just bring that point up again.
So, McFarland, you read my mind. We did have Mr. Schneiderwin lined up to testify. We have one other person, a member, who did have a question. Representative Abler, is your question appropriate at this point?
It would be, actually, I think, because it would be my intention, if you'd allow it, to offer the amendment that was passed out that Rep. Norton referenced. There's some technical changes, but if you would accept that today, I don't know if it meets the standard rules, but I think that would address a lot of the concerns. I think that to have this held over for more work till we agree in every word is not productive. But I think this will show that the committee likes the idea and we want to be flexible.
Representative Abler, would it be desirable to hear from Mr. Schneiderlin before or after?
Whatever.
I'm not quite sure it was your amendment. So why don't we hear from him and then we'll...
And he could speak to the amendment too if he wants, if that would help.
Oh, that would help, I suppose. But he'll be around. He won't be leaving. Mr. Schneiderlin.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the time this morning. And you're right. I mean, the question we heard yesterday, the issues we heard yesterday, you can't deny the importance of physical activity based on what it does for the body, but what it also does for potentially brain activity and student achievement. But before you go forward with this issue, I just want you to consider a couple of things that are within the bill. And as you know, school districts are the ones who are going to have to implement this. It's our administrators, it's our teachers who are going to get on the ground level who are going to have to administer this piece. And so, one thing that I didn't hear yesterday was what this bill means for those people. What's going to happen for our teachers, our administrators, our school board members for doing this? Sure, adopting new standards are a fun thing, but it's not something you can just do. Go down to the grocery store and pick them up off the shelf and put them in place. They're going to require some work from teachers, administrators to line the scope and sequence of the material so it fits for the age and the grade appropriate level. Again, we haven't heard what these new standards will be. And how do we know that these new standards will be better than what local school districts have done? Now, granted, they're national standards and they're quality teaching network standards. All of those probably on the surface mean that there's some value and they're probably good. But do we know what current districts are doing, and are these that much better than what the local districts are doing? What I did not hear also was that what the districts aren't doing now. In fact, school districts do have locally adopted standards in FIED. And we heard yesterday from two administrators who have voluntarily chosen, and their school board and their school district have incorporated physical activity as part of the academic curriculum. They found results from that. I know that they did that on their own. I know that St. Peter, for instance, has a smart core program that encourages small, fine motor, gross motor development within the curriculum as part of a reading program as well. So there are examples where districts are doing things now that are making a difference. Will districts also be assured that these standards are better? So that's one of the issues that you need to consider. And as you know, which areas, our concern is which areas are of the curriculum may we have to sacrifice? And I'm just throwing that out there because I had a discussion at our leadership conference with a straight talk from students, three high school students, one from a charter school in St. Paul, one from a metro district in Rosemont, Apple Valley, Eagan, and one from Minneapolis, Washburn. And one of the largest complaints that I heard from them about the present system is the lack of flexibility in the current day. And these are your high-flying kids who want to be challenged academically, physically, and so it's something that you need to consider as you move forward here as well. And so I think Representative Faust nailed the issue here earlier, is about the issue of, you know, we've been asked to present our issue on mandates, and we've had a list of 100 mandates that have come forward to you. And I just want you to, as you evaluate this bill as it moves forward, where does this exactly fit into that mix? Is this going to be another additional requirement for our school districts, or is this something that you feel is very important that we adopt and require all districts to accept? So with that, I'll leave it, answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Mr. Schneiderlin. Are there any questions at this point for Mr. Schneiderlin? And as I said, he's not going anywhere, I suspect. So if your question does arise, we can have you come back up. I don't see any questions at this point. Representative Abley, we do have your amendment in your language, but we also have the Norton Amendment, which I think has been worked out in terms of language. So why don't we do that first? Is that, you know, procedurally at least gets her bill in the form that she wants us to do it. It's wonderful having a gavel. It's time.
Yeah.
At time. So.
He disagrees.
Representative Norton, I think you have a motion then before us.
I do, and I'm going to add on the an oral amendment on line 1.8.
Representative Norton, you're working off of the A09-0047 amendment. Let's just move the amendment since you withdrew it. And then you can incorporate, and Paul, you can just incorporate the language within your amendment here. So Representative Norton moves the A09-0047 amendment with the following incorporation.
Thank you. You're doing better than I am on this.
I'll get there.
1.8, it says page 2, line 32, delete two students entering ninth grade, and after, later, insert, but is a requirement for graduation for students entering the ninth grade in 2009-2010 school year and later. And I think that clarifies it.
So Representative Norton moves the A09-0047 with the oral incorporation on line 1.8. Any questions? Can you repeat it again?
Yes, ma'am.
Representative Norton, if you can repeat it again, that'd be great.
On line 1.8 of the amendment, page 2, line 32, delete two students entering ninth grade, and after later, insert, but is a requirement for graduation for students entering the ninth grade in the 2009-2010 school year and later.
Members, do you have that language?
Later, it's online 232.
So she's especially the amendment before us is without what's written on the amendment, the 1.8. The amendment incorporates the new language, which will be inserted after the word later on line 2.32. Oh, I see. Okay. No, actually, all right, very good. So we do need to delete the two students entering ninth grade, mm-hmm. that verbiage. And so
that's same.
That's same. Mm-hmm. So you're adding new language, quote unquote, new language to the amendment that will be inserted after the word later on line 2.32. Okay. I think I was the only one who was confused. Representative Dietrich.
Yeah, I have a question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question to that amendment. Currently, if students get an F in a graduation requirement, do they not graduate? So, in other words, if they got an F in this class, would they be denied a diploma?
Representative Norton, I think it's a question to the broader bill related to the graduation requirement.
Yeah, and this amendment is a requirement. Yeah.
Based on my understanding, Mr. Chair, based on my understanding, and this is going back to school board days, that if you have graduation requirements, you're required to pass those in order to graduate. So I would say the answer would be yes.
And Representative Dietrich, I think that's true, at least right now, that's true regardless of this amendment. I mean, that speaks to the entire nature of the bill itself. Good question. I'm just saying that it speaks to the broader bill itself. Why don't we just act? Okay. Why don't we just act the amendment for now, and then we've got the bill before us. And again, members, this is kind of a courtesy thing for the auditor to have her bill before us. All in favor of the AO90047 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The bill is further amended before us. And Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, and I know it didn't meet the 24-hour rule. Do you have one of those? Okay, never mind that. Anyway, the discussion that we did, Representative Dietrich wasn't here to know I'm passing this thing out. There's an amendment that's called AO8-1684, which is from last May. There's a few technical changes that should be made, which Ms. Larson wrote for me. And this is giving an exception for people who do sports, et cetera. And I think it'll show the intent of the committee. But for my technical amendment, on line one, you would delete SF number 3001, the first unofficial endorsement.
Mr. Abler, why don't we just formally get your bill amendment before it? Just Mr. Abler moves the AO8-1684 amendment, and you're going to incorporate.
I'll read the changes. Ms. Larson could have, but I'll just save her the headache of it. So you're going to strike everything after amend because that's all the wrong header, and you'd be inserting HF 439 as amended by the committee. And then on page line 1.3, it'd be strike the 15 and insert a 2, and strike the 8 and insert a 32. And line 1.4, I'll give this to the clerk so you can, if you want it. And then 1.4, you'd delete the 5 and put in a 2. And then on the second page, there's a few minor changes in the wording. On line 2.7, at the end of the line, you'd strike to determine if, and insert search showing that. And then on line 2.8, you'd delete the word there. And on line 2.9, you'd delete the S on standards to make it standard. And that conforms to the way the bill has been changed already. Is that clear?
Yes.
Enough?
Okay. Members, is that clear? So the amendment is before us with the oral incorporation of mostly technical language.
Right.
Representative Abler just explained. Representative Swale.
Well, Mr. Chair, can I describe the amendment?
Oh, sure. I'm sorry.
Okay. I think
that would be
helpful. I think it'll help move the bill along, and I think it'll show the intent of the committee, and at least the committee work can be conceptual, if not complete. And I think, I don't know what's happening in the Senate with this, if Mr. Thomasoni has moved the bill yet or not. Has it moved in the Senate?
Representative Norton.
Not to my knowledge.
Okay, and I think that it'll be the statement of this committee that we like the idea if it has the votes got here. I don't know the count. And so a bill moving with some changes that have been incorporated gives the people who are interested the desire to talk about it in a serious way. And I would predict the bill will not pass in the form it's in, but it'll be maybe something close. And if we can reduce the fiscal note on it, getting rid of the extraneous dollars that are unnecessary, but focusing on the really necessary kids who want to get doing something, this will help to narrow the focus and yet accomplish maybe even a higher goal than we got to, at least helping it to pass. So, and this amendment allows for the board to consider other activities the students are involved in that would be equivalent or higher to that standard that they adopt. I urge your support.
Representative Norton, wish to comment on the amendment?
No.
Are you in favor, opposed, or neutral on the amendment?
Personally, again, I don't have any problem with this, and it would be the will of the committee.
Very well. Representative Wales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Abler. I really like the amendment, and it comes from my own experience as a mom of a daughter who spent many years performing with Ballet Minnesota and had over 10 roles in the Nutcracker and did a variety of other dance where she was maintaining an A average but also dancing 20 to 30 hours a week.
Wow.
And so furious that she had to take Bi-Ed. She was probably one of the most fit people I've ever encountered. Likewise, I have a son who is an expert whitewater kayaking instructor and competitor. And both of my children had interests that were outside the scope of what happens in the classroom physical education activities. I think this honors those students' interests in that where they excel in activities outside of school. And I think it will alleviate some of the pressure that those students who are high achieving feel by having to take a credit that is really filling up the schedule that they'd like to use with maybe other academic courses. Thank you very much.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question I would have, and actually, Representative Flores, you touched on it, those activities are outside the school. And my question is, in reading the amendment, I've read it a few times, I don't see that it prevents a school district or a school board, I guess is who has this authority, from taking into account outside of school activities to satisfy its requirement. I think we all understand what we're trying to get accomplished here. The real question will be is in the detail. And what will parents be doing coming to school board saying, my children is in XYZ program that should require this? Is this something the school board is going to struggle with? And I don't know if Abel, you want to address it or whatever. I think we understand the spirit of what we're trying to do. When it gets down to the nitty-gritty and the details, and my child takes part in something that is, I think, physically active, and who makes that determination, and do we go outside the school? So that's my question.
Representative Abel.
Mr. Harrison Denver, I have such a high level of confidence in the capacity of the school board to consider fairly all the concerns of the parents who've come before them and properly adjudicate this that I can't even put it as a concern on my list.
Mr. Speaker?
Representative Norton.
I agree with Representative Abler that this does put the onus on the school board and provide the flexibility that some of you have asked for. Particularly with response to both the economic impact on our entire high school curriculum and the changes that the amount of changes that may need to be made in a particular school should they not currently offer the 0.5. But I would also say boards currently are struggling with that. In our school district, we allow varsity athletic designation for students to participate in ice skating, which is not a school district activity, and our even allowed to leave school during the day for ice skating time as part of their physical activity. So boards do currently have some flexibility in doing that, and I think this may be a little bit more onerous for school boards, but they can designate their own rules at each local level. So.
And Representative Norton, in fact, in statute we have, and Representative Abler has placed this language within that section, a waiver for rigorous course studies, so you're not, Representative Abel, you're not creating a whole new rubric here as much as you're attaching it to an existing process and procedures for waivers. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Abler, on your amendment, I would assume you're primarily looking at extracurricular activities or something that's sanctioned, say, by the local community athletic program. But what about the kids in our district who walk 2 miles to school a day? Would they be covered? Mr. Chair, we're blessed in this committee to have a plethora of recovering school board members, including the maker of the question. You know, if you made the school board job too easy, no one, there'd be too many people wanting to do it. And so we only want the best and brightest. I really don't have a problem with them figuring that out at the level. And I hope that they're generous about that. The intention is to get these kids moving. And the reason I'm glad this came up on this part, because if this bill should get languish here, the bill may languish altogether. You never get a chance to be moved along. And this is a placeholder, at least, to say that we like the idea, get some flexibility. And as it moves along, I think you're on K-12 finance, a technical amendment there to make it clear what school boards can do. And if you think that's reasonable, would be appropriate. But I think the policy direction that this is passes and moves out of here is that kids got to move. We're dying in our chairs. And the health costs are going nuts in the private sector and everywhere else. If we don't get kids trained as young people to do things besides, though the Wii is now considered exercise, holy cow, you know, with the little thing you move. And I mean, this is madness. And so I think I'm confident that the system will scrub this a bit more to make it practical.
Mr. Chair, and on a more serious note, actually, I see this bill as a means of protecting schools or school districts from are requiring school districts not to drop physical education. Most of them already have some requirement, but as we keep imposing new standards and requirements on our students, there's a tendency to say, let's drop physical education as a requirement. So I see this as sort of a placeholder to make sure that that doesn't happen. And I'll be supporting this as well.
Thank you. Representative McFarland.
I just have a comment about that. Right now, school boards have that authority because they are the ones choosing to have this as a graduation requirement. If it becomes law, they don't have that choice. And I do recall people coming to the school board meetings asking for waivers and things like that. I can see the huge lines coming. And I do have concerns about that, too, because we're not following the local standard. We're following the state standard.
Mr. Chair?
Representative North.
Representative McFarland, I totally agree. And my hope is that the board would not have to have a lineup of people coming before them. They would set in place a process to appoint the physical education department, their administration, to handle an applicating process. But, yeah, we have some of those standing in line.
Mr. Harris, you wish to comment on the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, for the Heart Association. First, I just needed a little clarification with Representative Abler's amendment. Did he make a change with the word from standard to standard?
Yes.
Representative Abler?
Yes, that was one of the amendments.
Okay. Mr. Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, first of all, I have to go on record for the Heart Association. That they would prefer not to have the waiver language in there. First of all, this is about teaching lifelong learning skills. You may gain some of those potentially by participating in some sports. However, there are some sports that one may learn in physical education classes that students don't currently participate in outside of the school, but maybe later in life decide to take up that type of sport for a variety of reasons. So we feel that there's some lifelong opportunities to learn here in class. Also, my concern about the word standard versus standards, one of the benchmarks with the QTN, the Quality Teaching Network, is that the students should enjoy themselves, that they should learn to love the activity. So just for devil's advocate purposes, if a student were to come forward and say, well, I really enjoy this, therefore I've met a standard or the standard, whichever one they choose, I just want to make sure that we're not creating unintentionally a loophole in this sense. And I do finally, Mr. Chair, just want to point out that council has pointed out that there is already some language in statute that deals with the lifelong learning opportunities here in that's already, I think it's part of the amendment here on the first page under rigorous course of study and waivers. So perhaps we can try to deal with this offline.
Yeah, members, I would like us to get to a vote on this. I can tell you my experience over the last couple of years is that but this is just my experience, that without language like this, this bill becomes very difficult. For the broader bodies, it was the subject of intense negotiations with the Senate last year. Very quickly, Representative Abler and then Representative Dietrich.
I'll be really short. So I think the word standard is a technical, it could be an array of many things, but it's, and I think, as Representative Marion said, I think the Heart Association would like that LaBelle movie.
Thank you. Representative Dietrich.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of years ago, I would have not supported this at all. But I think, the world has changed. What we now know about physical activity and child obesity and the values that every individual has to have here if they want to enjoy a long, healthy life, I think that we know too much now. Not to say that as a state we have to make a statement that this is extremely important. And, and I just want to make one comment about the learning to love something. My children, too, very active. Three sports a year. I mean, at very high levels of athletic ability, extremely high. But, if it wasn't for the power volleyball class that they took, they would have never developed that love of power volleyball. And you know what? They're going to probably play power volleyball much longer than they're ever going to play football. And so it is that love of activity that we have to try to instill. I don't think we're here yet in any of these versions. And so, Mr. Chairman, what I would, this, and it would be my impression that this has to go to finance. You know, I wish that we could just, you know, get some commitment from Representative Norton that she is going to continue to work on this and see if there aren't some other solutions. I would prefer to take an approach of, you know, instead of the typical physical education class, some sort of physical activity, the type of things that they were talking about yesterday, like is the outdoors adventure class, you know, could that be qualified as a physical education class? Just so that there are some of those avenues for kids to pursue, that we make sure that there are other avenues for kids to pursue their interests, like Representative Swales was saying. I think that is important, too. And I think the school board issue, I don't think this is the school board should be handing out waivers for physical activities. When my children miss a physical education class and they have to go get that the form signed that they've done that hour of physical activity to keep their grade up or whatever, that is not a school board type activity. I think that that should be a decision made at the local school then, at least that knows what the options are available, and they can make a list, and then they can say you can qualify for these lists that are actually accessible to all of the kids in the local community. The school board, especially when you get to large school districts like ours, they don't have that type of knowledge. So those are my comments, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dietrich. Representative Norton.
And I will commit to continuing to work with you, and maybe you and I can have a conversation about some ideas between now and its next hearing. And I will say that I learned to love archery and bowling in my physical education classes in high school and college, and still do, not archery so much, but still do bowling.
Very well. Members, the motion before us is the adoption of the AO8 1684 amendment with the oral incorporations that Representative Abler made on the record. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Norton, your bill is before us. As amended, members, are there other questions? I also want to invite other members from the audience if they wish to specify for or against the bill, if they can come down at this point. Representative Demers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Something else I neglected to bring up earlier. We did adopt an amendment, Mr. Chair, yesterday also on
this
the bill. Local school district wellness policies website. I believe that school districts are required right now to have a policy handbook to have all the policies in there. My question is that policy required, is this also this wellness policy, if they have it, and it appears it says when available, I'm assuming there's no requirement, I'm not aware, do they also have to put in their policy handbook, and what in their handbook has to be on the website, and it seems like you're getting kind of prescriptive here, Representative Norton, and I'd like your thinking on that.
Representative Norton.
Well, I can't tell you what the federal requirements are, but this is when available. It's very passive language that we make it online, which is more easily available, and if they don't have to do the manual, it could also be a cost saving. And if it's duplicative, perhaps it is, but there shouldn't be a cost to placing the policy online as an additional for those that have the web.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I could, I think school districts are required, not by federal law, but by state. We have to have a policy handbook for kids. They have to understand their rights and responsibilities in a school district. I'm not sure that this wellness policy has to be in that handbook or not. I'm just concerned, again, about complexity for school districts. We have if we have a website, do we have requirements for the website? Yes, it might just take a second to type it in there, but it's the time it takes to figure out what are we supposed to have in here, what are we not supposed to have in here. Seems to me if we want to have a wellness policy posted someplace, we should just make it simple and say it's going to be in your handbook or not. And if we want it to be online, maybe the handbook should be online. But it seems to me it'd be saying, well, we have some things in a handbook and we're requiring some things to be in a website. We're getting a mixture of things again that just creates mandate pressures for them to have to spend time figuring out where do we put what and what does the state tell us we have to do. I think it's very prescriptive. Personally, if it's important enough to be out there, it should be maybe put into the requirement that has to be in the written policy handbook. And if any of that's important enough to be online, maybe you should just say the whole thing has to be online. I don't know, but I just have concern about that. We hadn't talked about it.
Representative Zimmer, and I suspect Mr. Schneiderman might tend to agree with you on that. Okay, post them out quickly. I knew he wouldn't go away. Mr. Schneiderman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zimmer, you are correct. It is a federal policy, and that's a policy that all districts are required to adopt, and it addresses wellness issues and requires you to engage your community to develop some wellness standards and goals at the local level, which presently is not required to be a part of your website now. And I think you could bring up a good point: is how do you, you know, how do you distinguish which one's more important than the other? And it appears that this one may be, if we're requiring this one. But so I'll just leave it at that and be able to answer any questions.
Representative Norton, Mr. Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dimmer, actually, this is something we talked and discussed with the School Board Association last year, and at that point in time with this language that did pass last year, they did not have concerns about this language. And that's why we actually originally was much more prescriptive, and so that's why we added more flexibility to make it work for the school district. And it's really in an effort. Some have said, well, look, it's, you know, the parents need to have some responsibility about this too. Well, this is offering some opportunities to those parents, whether they have access difficulties getting the actual handbook. This is another alternative for those parents to take on some responsibility.
Representative Katz.
Yeah, and I think we're, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we're getting a couple of things confused, and that is a student handbook versus a faculty handbook versus a district policy handbook. Very different there. In a student handbook, you would never have a wellness policy. That's more of the school rules and standards that of practice within a school building. And what you'll find that is districts that have wellness are very often not found. Within my district, you actually have to ask for the wellness policy in order to get it, because it is not found in the faculty manual within my high school. It is not found in a student handbook, and so this offers an opportunity then for a wellness policy, something that has been discussed as a holistic approach to how a community is going to stay healthy and active, to make sure that everybody does have access to that.
Very well. Any other questions? I think we're close to vote here. Anyone else wish to testify on the bill? If not, Representative Norton renews her motion that House File 439, as amended, be recommended to pass and refers to the Finance Committee with a further recommendation that it be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Norton. Representative Bigham.
Yes.
This is Carlos Smith, right? Yep. Welcome, Representative Bigham. The chair moves that House File 523 be recommended to pass. And so your bill is before us. Welcome.
I think it's being laid over, Mr. Chair. Is my bill being laid over or no?
It will be the intent for us to lay that over.
Oh.
That's correct. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. thank you for the opportunity to come before the committee, too.
Oh.
Little background for some of the newer members on the committee. Last year, a new law was passed that required, upon initial hiring, school boards to inquire to the Board of Teaching about a teacher if there had been any disciplinary action taken against that teacher for sexual misconduct or attempted sexual misconduct between the teacher and the student. The reason that is because sometimes there were no criminal charges or something, and the teacher was just, we all heard about it in the news, where teachers were just going from school district to school district getting rehired. And after the bill was implemented, and passed overwhelmingly, I might say, that the Board of Teaching approached again and said that it's very difficult to determine, based on the stipulation agreements that they receive, in order to make that determination, whether the conduct was sexual in nature or not. So with deliberation, we came up with a bill that will allow the Board of Teaching to disclose all public data that is in that file for disciplinary action. So otherwise, we would have had to deal with some data privacy issues. For the purposes of disciplinary action, it does not include child support or spousal support, if there were issues with that, or delinquent taxes. I mean, this is going to be obviously public data that's already in the file. So with that, I can turn it over to Ms. Ballmer, who is with the Board of Teaching, And she can explain after the implementation of the law kind of what they ran into and give you some examples if you would like.
Thank you. Welcome. Good morning, Ms. Palmer.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Bigham. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. As was noted, this is we're looking at language that was newly enacted at last session that had to do with disclosing what's already public information in terms of Board of Teaching action against a teacher's license. We call these stipulation agreements. That's the bulk of the actions that we take. Sometimes they're also called orders, so you may hear that. What happened as we look towards the May 1 effective date of this new requirement, in the implementation, we ran into a few issues and that we're trying to resolve here, essentially with this language. Specifically, when the Board of Teaching takes action against a teacher's license, it's a negotiated agreement. It's a settlement between the Board of Teaching and the individual teacher, signed by both parties. So the language therein is what's been agreed to by both parties. Now, the Board of Teaching has been around for over 30 years, over 35 years, actually, and we've been in this business of working on looking at discipline for that entire time. So we've got, in that time period, about nearly 700 of these negotiated agreements that resulted in discipline in one form or another on the teacher's license. These agreements were not written necessarily for the public or for anyone but the Board of Teaching and that individual teacher. And as such, there is not often the clarity that's needed for us to make the determination of whether or not there was sexual misconduct or attempted sexual misconduct. And I've got a couple of examples. I know we're running short on time. I'd be happy to share.
You're fine, Ms. Palmer.
Okay.
We've got a good 25 minutes left here.
Okay. So if that would be helpful, I do have a couple of stipulation agreements that I could show you because that would hopefully demonstrate sort of the quandary that we're in terms of not wanting to be subjective in making the determination of whether or not there was sexual misconduct or attempted sexual misconduct. So I'd be happy to show those to you or answer questions, whatever might be the most helpful.
Why don't you run through at least one?
Okay.
I think that will be instructional for committee members.
Okay. And I apologize for the scan that we couldn't get so quite right. But what you're seeing here is an example of a fairly recent stipulation agreement, and I'll scroll down to the bottom in a moment where you'll see the signature of we've redacted the teacher's signature, although it is public, but we thought we're going to redact that name and the signature of the Board of Teaching. But this just outlines a three-page document, the agreement, and it states in number one, we've redacted the name, although it is public, that the areas of licensure, so this individual teacher was a math teacher and had a coaching license. It talks about where this person was employed. And then number three gets to sort of the heart of the matter. This one, we called it boundary violations, or violating appropriate teacher-student boundaries by emails, discussing your personal life. The student was alone in the classroom with the teacher, and they in fact spent time together outside of the day. Now, whether or not that constitutes sexual misconduct or attempted sexual misconduct, this agreement doesn't tell us that. So we at the Board of Teaching, of course, we've got volumes of files that resulted in this agreement, but those files are not public, and in fact they're very tightly protected by the data privacy laws, and so all that we have in terms of what's public is this. We found ourselves to be in an awkward position as we went through our archives of having to determine, well, would we send this to a district or would we not? And we're very uncomfortable being sort of that judge and jury. I'll just scroll through this very quickly so you can see what happens here. Now, therefore, here's where the discipline part begins. And it talks about under Roman numeral 1 that this individual's teaching licenses were going to be indefinitely suspended until he completed student-teacher boundary counseling with a particular therapist. and so on. And then there's some, of course, legalese and boilerplate language that we always need to have in here in terms of the teacher having waiving rights to after signing the agreement and so on. So that's the bulk of the agreement. The other one that I think might be very instructive for you is, I'll show you one more that was from a number of years ago, and in fact you can tell by the poor quality, and again I apologize, but this is from 1989, and you'll see that, again, in the early part of the stipulation agreement, it talks about this person's licensure areas, English language arts, math, secondary guidance. And then it just talks about that there was a violation of Minnesota statute. We have no information about what that violation was. And, of course, like I said, there are files underneath this stipulation agreement that led to the discipline, but those files are not public. We cannot share with an administrator anything further than what's here. So we, as we looked at this, we thought, well, gosh, would we send this? Do we know if this had anything to do with sexual misconduct or attempted sexual misconduct? Certainly, there are lots of different types of discipline that the Board of Teaching takes against the teacher's license. It may be sexual misconduct. It may be excessive use of force. It may have to do with a broken contract. It may have to do with compliance in terms of special education reporting. There are a number of different types of discipline or reasons for discipline. So we thought, as a way to remedy the situation, we would simply have the law state that we'll send all of these, any information that we have, rather than just limit it to sexual misconduct or attempted. It's already public information, and the one final thought is that we believe that one of the real strengths of the bill that was passed last year in particular was the fact that it required the application to have the applicant disclose whether or not disciplinary action had been taken, and that here it would be also expanded. And we believe that if a teacher has had discipline taken against his or her license and wishes to teach again, it's a conversation that really should happen locally and with the administrator. And there was a situation not too many months ago where actually a teacher's license had been revoked, which is the strongest of discipline that the Board of Teaching takes. And this was a younger teacher who had made some mistakes early in her career. She decided that she wanted to go back and get her license reinstated. She came before the board and made a very compelling case about how she had learned and grown from her mistakes, met all the new requirements, and in fact the board reinstated her. And so we believe that it can be a positive experience, but administrators should know when there has been action taken.
Thank you. Representative Bingham.
Thank you. Just a couple other things I wanted to point out is even prior to last year's passage of the bill, you know, nothing prohibited school districts from calling the Board of Teaching and asking for all public information out of a teacher's file. So I just wanted to point that out. And the other thing is, this is an important bill to have implemented, and I wanted it implemented correctly. One thing I have asked the board to do, and I just want this on the record, is that when they do a stipulation agreement or they get information from the local level about it, I've asked that the forms that they fill out or implement do indicate whether something is sexual in nature or not. I think it will be easier to implement the law as well. And I think they just need to update their procedures on how they do that. The other thing I will say is that Education Minnesota has a teeny tiny little problem concern with the possible disclosure of information that maybe doesn't have anything to do with misconduct, but rather not filing in, I'm not a teacher, IEP. IEP. They do have concerns about that. I'll work with the Senate author on that to see. We'll come to a discussion about that.
Very well. Perhaps this is a good time to hear from Ed Minnesota. I'm not forcing you. You don't have to testify, but Ms. Falkwager.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and also Secretary Steve Smith, so I was very comfortable with Representative Biggins kind of stating their concern. If an individual is disciplined because, for example, they did not follow the IEP timeline, maybe they had a family situation or it was something beyond their control, but they were disciplined by the Board of Teaching, they would also be designated as being disciplined, and it would be the same as somebody who had a sexual inappropriate behavior. So we're just concerned that if a prospective employer was contacting the Board of Teaching and saw that they had been disciplined, and if they did not look at the paperwork, they might just cross off that person as a potential candidate. So I think it's something that we can work with the author on, and I think Representative Sigham has a very good idea in that if the form merely had a check about what's a sexual misconduct, that might make it easier, but those are discussions that we will continue to have.
Representative Peterson, I have a question for you, Representative Bingham, but it's a procedural question. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just questioning the writer about the second page, and it lists two actions, the child support or maintenance payments, that wouldn't be reported. Are there others? I mean, that seems to me to be pro-definitive, and have you really investigated, are there other kinds of things that we ought not to be reporting, and by putting that in, are we confining ourselves to information that, or to incidents that we might, other things that we might think should be excluded?
Mr. Peterson, I think it's appropriate to be cautious and to understand any broad unintended ramifications. Ms. Palmer, I see you nodding, but I think Representative Bingham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Peterson. We've talked about this with a lot of different organizations that deal, you know, whether it's the Board of Teaching, School Board Association, Education Minnesota. I think these were the concerns that people had that school districts are like, we don't care about the taxes, the delinquent taxes, all, you know, the child support, something like that. It's none of their business. Doesn't affect how they teach. The reason I think for the IEP, concern is that because of what Ms. Allschwager said, that they possibly could be put together. However, I would digress back to say that if there is disciplinary action and to be reinstated, they could go before the board to say, you know, it was a family issue, I was late. I mean, that's my other thought to Ms. Allschwager. But if Ms. Palmer has something to add to that. If I may,
Ms. Palmer.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, the unique part about those two provisions is that they are specifically stated in law that we must suspend a license. When we get notification from either the Department of Revenue or the Department of Human Services, we are under law required to take action. So these are not board actions in the same sense as the others. They are not the result of an investigation. They are not the result of a mandatory report from a school district. They are the function of other state agencies and entities, and we are a consequence. So that's why those two are a bit unique. In fact, they are unique for that reason. And just by way of context, there are more of those every year, those suspensions, than any other kind of discipline in the entire Board of Teaching history. We have not even quite 700 disciplinary actions taken. So these are not everyday occurrences. There are usually a couple of actions taken at each monthly board meeting, but the numbers are small. There are more of these, but they're not board action the same way.
Representative Loom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Palmer, you started to answer the question that I really have, which is, how many cases are referred to the Board of Teaching for consideration of disciplinary action? And then approximately how many teachers do we have in Minnesota? So I'm trying to get a sense of the magnitude of what we're talking about.
Ms. Palmer.
Thank you. I've got numbers from 2007. We are working on getting the 2008 numbers, so I apologize. This is a little bit older. But we had about 100, well, we had 107 cases reviewed by the disciplinary committee, comprised of teachers who serve on the Board of Teaching. So 107 in the entire calendar year of 2007. And we, over half of them resulted in what we call warning letters, where the board said that, you know, we think something, you know, we see some concerns here, there is no action going to be taken, you know, we hope that, you know, whatever your situation was can be remedied or whatnot. So that's common, where we just say, we received this, we reviewed it, we're choosing not to take action, we wish you well, and you know, here are our expectations. There were 30 in that year that did result in some kind of some Board of Teaching action. So a little less than a third. I would say that that's on the high side. It's probably going to be between 20 and 30 annually, at least in the last couple of years, in terms of action taken.
And just to follow up, what would be the process? I mean, does the process actually start at the local level before it ever goes up to the Board of Teaching? I'm just, it sounds to me like it's a pretty high threshold to have a case brought to your level.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, there are mandatory reporting requirements. For example, and I don't have the statute before me, but if a teacher is placed on unrequested administrative leave, that's one ground for reporting that teacher to the Board of Teaching. We get reports in a number of different ways. Certainly the mandatory reporting requirements, as outlined in law, are going to be the bulk of our reports that result in investigations. But we receive complaints from teachers, peers, from parents, and we look into all of those. You're right. It takes, in order to result in disciplinary action, there needs to be some pretty significant both documentation and evidence that that discipline is warranted. A teacher who makes a mistake or is late once or twice on paperwork is not going to rise to the level of a Board of Teaching action. But it's someone that's typically got a bit of a history, either a history of some kind of neglect of duty or inappropriate behavior, or it's a single act that is serious enough to rise to our level.
Representative.
One last question, I think the chair for his indulgence, to Representative Bigham. So then, essentially, your bill would allow any disciplinary action that's been taken by the Board of Teachers, the public information, to flow through to a school board or an administrator contemplating or offering employment. Is that correct, essentially?
Representative Bigham.
Mr. Chair and Representative Boone, yes.
Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify for or against the bill? Representative Bingham, I have a procedural question, I guess, for you. Although before I do that, perhaps this question might be better directed. First question might be better directed to Ms. Baumert. The effective date is in the proposed bill is May 1st of 2009. That's before we are scheduled to adjourn as a legislature. That's fine, but I'm just if you can offer me some rationale why we need May 1st, 2009. I'm thinking maybe it has to do with the school year and being able to vet through properly, but I don't want to assume. How important is that May 1st, 2009 deadline?
Mr. Chair, we had it effective immediately in the other bill, and then the board brought up the fact that we're going to need some time to put a procedure in place. So then we moved it to May of 09, but I don't know why we picked that day. Do you?
Ms. Palmer.
I think it was with an eye towards two things. First of all, some implementation time on our end. We needed to literally go back into archives and find all of these. So an effective immediate effective date was going to be very difficult for us. So we set it out to May 1 of 09 last year with the hope that that would give us enough time to do the work that we needed to do to develop a system that was operational and meaningful, but also would be impactful of the next school year and hiring and staffing decisions being made in the spring. Certainly, we are open to making a change on that, if that's most appropriate.
Okay. Representative Peterson, if you can use the mic, Representative Peterson, that would help.
I know, it's hard to hear. It's hard to look at the audience.
I know, it's tough.
I just have one other question, and that is when you send these reports back, if somebody's applying, and you send the reports back to the district, and you talked about the underlying data, because your report might be very vague about what, you don't know whether it's sexual misconduct or a lacking in IEP. Are you allowed under data privacy to send those underlying reasons or the paperwork or the data to the district? Or does the district simply get something that says, this person has had disciplinary action, and they have to just ask the candidate or wing it? I mean, what information can they get under data privacy is what I'm asking.
Ms. Palmer.
Mr. Chair, you're right. All we can give is what's public, and what's public are the final Board of Teaching actions, such as the ones I showed you. Some are going to be more helpful than others. Some are going to be frustrating for an administrator, such as the one from 1989 that really doesn't say anything about what the grounds were for the discipline. That's where, again, I believe one of the strengths of this bill is the requirement on the application itself. To have that teacher disclose in a very forthright manner whether or not discipline has been taken against because of the license, and providing an opportunity to talk about it. We are not able to share any of the documentation besides that final action. So,
Representative Kapp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One question I have, though, is once that information is sent to the school district, the hiring committee does have the right to ask the candidate to explain the board action, correct?
Yes.
Ms. Palmer.
I imagine that's the case, yes.
Okay.
So, Representative Bingham, let me then get to the procedural thing I want to say. Our original intent was to, when we spoke about this bill before the hearing, was to lay it over for possible inclusion in a policy article bill. And actually, I haven't shared with the committee members that kind of bigger play is my intent. So hereby, I'm sharing that intent with you. It wasn't so much a secret as much as I was trying to figure out what kind of the overall most effective strategy for the committee would be. And so it is this chair's intent to create in essence, an omnibus policy bill that would be considered for incorporation into the K-12 finance bill later. But then I did look at the May 1st, 2009 deadline, and I thought, well, if the board needs this, then that's not a good idea to be attaching it to the end game here, because the end game, who knows? I mean, officially the end game is in the third week of May. It doesn't sound like May 1st is a hard and fast date here. And so one thing we can do, but there's two questions here. One thing we can do is just to make sure that, that we have some good time is to change that, perhaps to June 1st. But actually a bigger question at this point is, we've heard from one stakeholder that you've been in communications with Ed Minnesota, in terms of changing some language to arrive at some accommodation based on some new information. And I would hate to have you have to do that on the floor of the House. And so I'm wondering if perhaps we, as opposed to trying to send it straight to the floor, because of the May 1st concern I had, that perhaps at this point it in fact might not be better to lay the bill over until such time as you're able to work out some effective language. We can revisit the bill then and then decide whether in fact we still want to send it straight to the floor or try to incorporate it into a policy article bill. So I'm just kind of, well, I guess I'm requesting your preference.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. I think now that I have some time to think about this, I haven't had my full cup of coffee today, but May 1st, I think, was the date chosen because
when, and the chief is in here that can maybe talk a little bit more about this, but they wanted time for when they start hiring for the fall. They wanted some leeway time, and I think our traditional date of August 1st or was pushing it for when they do hiring, I believe is what one of the indicators was for the May 1st date. Mr. Chair, I agree with you. I don't want to be amending this on the floor, but there always is the Senate that in their committee process that they can fix it, and then we can go to a conference committee. I can adopt the conference report. So I'll leave it up to you, Mr. Chair, and how you want to do it and how you think. I'm completely open.
Thank you. My preference then would be to lay the bill over,
okay.
And that gives us the most flexibility in terms of whether we'll incorporate it into the policy article or just send it straight out to the floor once you've been able to bring in some amendments to take care of some legitimate concerns here. And I understand the strategy with the Senate, but quite frankly, you know, we're the House, and it's our responsibility to shape the best language
right.
possible, and that's always my default position. So we're going to adjourn here real quickly, but Representative Abel...
Sure, yeah, and I just want to echo your thoughts. The Senate should really follow the House more often. We do
I
better
agree.
Work here. And just on the policy bill and the finance, just advice, if you'd like any... who knows what the finance world winds up like. And if you want to really do policy work, maybe you could actually create a pure policy bill and just keep it separate. And you actually could then negotiate that separate, all the other interesting challenges that would be waiting mm-hmm. for us. And especially being a bill that's worked out, you actually can get it passed.
I think it's very good advice. And so at this point, I think the point is to adopt the most flexible position yeah. that we can adopt. Representative Bigger.
I guess I would just say, Mr. Chair, that that's assuming that you don't think I already feel the bill is in the best form it is. That's all I'm saying.
Well, and Representative Bingham, I don't want you stuck on the floor of the House
right.
Dealing with some very difficult issues. But if you want to go for that, you know, we can certainly do that as well. But I wouldn't advise that.
Yes, so. That's fine.
Okay. Very well. So then the chair will lay over House File 523. We may be bringing this back up very shortly for possible amendments and then possibly sending it straight to the floor. Until then, members, we are adjourned until Tuesday.